Hello, All-Star listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Veterinary Roundtable presented by All-Star Veterinary Clinic, the podcast where we answer your veterinary-related questions while having some fun along the way. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to leave us a review on your podcast provider of choice, and if you have any feedback to offer to improve the Veterinary Roundtable, let us know. First of all, we need to mention Dr. Duckwall. In case you're listening, we miss you.
And congratulations.
And congratulations on Helen.
Oh, she's adorable.
Love she is name. Adorable. Love the name.
Yeah, love the name.
She's cute.
Helen Claire. Right? Aww. Isn't that right?
I think that's right. Yeah. Yeah. No, super cute. Super sweet.
Very
super
Victorian. Sweet.
It, right?
Yeah, I love that.
I know. She needs like some kind of crown on or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think we can arrange that.
We Etsy probably could.
Everything. I think we have one in the back, honestly.
Can you take a message? Abby DePew.
Oh, that's for later in the podcast.
Oh, yes. I will.
But why don't you go ahead and listen? Oh, okay. We'll listen to it in a minute.
I was going to say, we'll just listen to it in a minute.
Okay. That works. Little suspense. Keep people on the hook. Also, before we get too far along in the podcast, we have to promote Chowder Caught a Cold, which is a book that has been written by two of our staff members. Chowder Caught a Cold. Josie Devaney, who's one of the RVTs.
Josie Ellis.
Ellis now. God, I keep calling everybody by their maiden names because that's how I know them.
Yeah. Yep.
Josie did all the pictures, which are really, really amazing. The colors and the pictures are really cool. You have the right age group for this book.
This is adorable. I was just wondering if it was for children or like adults.
It's children.
It's adorable. I need to take a copy home.
Yeah. You should.
Yeah.
And Dr. Pulse wrote it. So be on the lookout for Chowder's next adventure.
Yes. It is available on Amazon, or you can get it on Kindle if you want to read it on those e-readers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, so on today's episode, we have myself, room assistant and interim co-host, Becca Miller, our newest associate veterinarian as of yesterday, Dr. Jessica Friedberg, registered veterinary technician, Bailey Murray, and my co-host, top dog, the amazing Dr. Emily King.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Excellent. Dr. King's kept me on my toes today.
I just keep throwing things at you. Yeah. Where's your notebook?
It's right here, okay, full of everything. Okay, there
you go. Yeah, you got to hold on to that notebook when you're working with her.
It stayed in my pocket all day.
I just threw away my sticky note that she handed me a little bit ago. She goes, here, this is what we're doing.
Like, and this, so and this, and messages. This. I know, right? I just kept throwing things at you.
It's all right. We're good.
It's all good.
We're surviving.
Keep it fun.
So how was the second day?
I was going to say, how's the second day?
It's rad. I love it here. I don't know. It's been great. Everybody's great. A lot of fun, interesting cases.
Tell everybody where you're from. Everybody your scoop.
Okay. I was born.
Yeah, there you go.
On a rainy Saturday. No, just kidding. So I'm from originally outside of Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And went to school out there, college out there. And then after undergraduate school, went back to school to become a doctor, become a veterinarian. So I went to Drexel University for some of those studies and community college, and then ultimately ended up going to veterinary school in England. So there you go to school for 5 years and not four. So I was there for 5 years. And that was a amazing experience in hindsight. It was really hard work and different. So then I ended up after in vet school in Oregon for a year, Seattle for the past 6 years. And that's where I met my husband and had my kids and had started a family. But we moved out here because we wanted a better quality of life for the cost of living in the schools and make the kids happy. They want a yard and a dog. So we're here and we're really happy we're here. It's so beautiful and everybody's great.
And you have a puppy.
I don't have a
not
puppy.
Yet. No. I thought you were getting one.
We really wanted a puppy, but not. I'm looking. Shout out to a 3-year-old Labrador Retriever. If anybody has a female, they want to donate.
Sitting on their porch.
Sitting on the porch. There's just one hanging out somewhere.
Drinking lemonade. No,
just Little right. Labs is a good rescue to look at.
I'm a approved adopter. Yeah. So we're just looking for the right dog. But yeah, no puppy right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So that's my scoop, and I'm very grateful to be here with this awesome set of people. And
we're happy to have you. We're excited to have you here.
So happy. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So, and you have some special interests. You really like seniors, right?
I love
people, and no, I'm just kidding. And cats. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I did work in a nursing home, so I have some experience with senior people. But I do love like a senior geriatric cat and dog. They're the sweetest. And I did do some feline only medicine as well. And I am fear-free certified, which I'm pretty proud of.
Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that means a lot to me to make sure pets are as fear-free and comfortable as possible. So those are my special interests, I think, for sure. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Those are great.
Those are great. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're super excited to have you here.
Thank you.
Okay, icebreakers. What is your go-to drink or snack while working, Bailey?
Right now, I've been a fan of yogurt and blueberries.
Very healthy.
And raspberries. Well, it's just easy to eat when I'm here.
Okay.
My go-to drink is probably just water with some water flavoring because we always get yelled at for not drinking our water enough. So that's what we try to keep on hand.
Water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does the body good.
Definitely. I would say probably the same. I do my best to try to drink as much water as possible because Nicole and Amber like to yell at me if I'm not. But then I drink Diet Coke as well just because I need that little bit of caffeine boost to keep me going.
Yeah. I'd say for me, it used to be Red Bull, but then Harrison started yelling at me. So then I stopped drinking Red Bull. Yeah,
for a while, there was a lot of Red Bull floating around.
Red Bull. I think we even like ordered that one time from Kroger. We got like 50 Red Bulls.
Yeah, you did the happy card and it was just like Red Bull would just appear.
It's like my emergency caffeine drink.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Dr. King would come around. She had the little happy cart and she'd be like, okay, here you go. Here's a Red Bull for you and here's some candy.
So
we're all just shaking a little bit from the caffeine.
That's
it was
right.
great. But we had to kind of nix that for a little bit.
Yeah. I'm now on to water. So.
We got to try to keep ourselves hydrated, you know.
Yeah. We're all on a healthy kick right now. Water and nuts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, well.
Yeah. I just bought one of those water bottles where you're supposed to, it has the times on it. And then it says, good job. And refill. But it's really helped. And this is like a 2-day-old thing, literally. So it's funny you guys are talking about this. But it's really helped with sleep and with energy for me so far. So
are you able to drink it all?
Yeah, I am. I've
you can
there.
Do it.
Yeah, I've been there. I mean, I don't know if I'm drinking the correct amount. I'm drinking 90 ounces a day. I'm 40. Yeah.
Huge thing with trying to keep yourself hydrated is finding a cup that you will use. Mine currently has a picture of my dog on it. So I'm like, oh, you're cute. Here, better drink some water compared to just like my normal silver water bottle. I always forget about them. But I'm like, if I'm looking at the one that's going to either keep track of the times or it's got a picture of something on it, I'm far more likely to drink out of it.
Just calling you.
I have a patient under sedation. Is it okay?
Yeah. Of course. Go ahead. Okay.
Hi, Josie. I'm in podcasts. How can I help you?
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry to interrupt you. Is it okay if I ask you a quick question?
Is it okay? Yeah. Sure.
Chloe's dad is here. We're supposed to be getting urine on her, right?
Yeah, we are for in-hospital urinalysis and sediment.
I will attempt it again to get another sample. Did you know he was coming back this soon?
I did not.
I told him we would text him.
So I'll just see if we can get a sample and keep him updated.
Okay, thank you. And Clarice is doing well?
Cool, you're
doing great,
yeah.
Yep, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hey, that's said water bottle.
Oh, that is the said water bottle.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, for all those people who have questions about Vocera, that's how Vocera works.
Yeah.
Because we get a lot of questions about, what is that around your neck?
Mm. Oh, yeah, there is a way to put it on Do Not Disturb. We just have not done
that. We forget that. And we have, to Dr. Friedberg's point, there's somebody under sedation, so... Mm-hmm. Answer it. That way we know we're taking care of whoever is under sedation or that the technician doesn't need something.
Yeah.
Beach or countryside, Bailey?
I'm a countryside through and through. I love Colorado for the most part, but I love everywhere else too.
Okay. I'm totally beach.
As long as I've got somewhere nice to read a book, it doesn't really matter. You can put me wherever. I'm just going to curl up with a book and just be like, yes.
I'm not a fan of the sand. Okay. That's my problem.
I love the beach. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally beach.
I understand the sand issue. I mean,
it gets everywhere.
Yeah. I ruined a book that way one time. I was reading on the beach. The sand is, I like 2 years later opened the book and I was like, there is still sand in there. So I've done that.
But it never goes away.
When Harrison was like 5, he couldn't stand the beach because it got in his swimsuit. And so every time he would change his swimsuit 3 million times a day when we would go to the beach because he could not stand.
It's like when you pack for vacation, you just bring like 10 pairs of underwear for 3 days. That's what you do when you go to the beach. You just bring swimsuits.
I just kept saying go swimming and then it'll rinse out.
Yeah, I mean, the water will rinse it all out, right? I would see when it comes to swimming, I would prefer the ocean over a pool because the chlorine gives me headaches.
Oh.
So if I'm going to go swimming, I would prefer an ocean or a lake or something like that. But when it comes to like vacations, I guess it really, as long as I have a place I can curl up and read a book, whether it's countryside or beach, doesn't matter as much.
Matter.
Yeah. I'm too scared of the wild animals in the ocean and lakes.
Are you telling me you're not scared of the wild animals that live in the trees?
Those are fine. We don't know half the animals.
Listen,
in the
mountain lions? I don't know.
Listen, it's just dark and you just see eyes from the trees.
Yeah. These are all really good points. But I also think if you're like at the beach, it depends on the circumstances. You know, as you get older, you can't tolerate as much as you used to. But when I think of the beach, too, I think of maybe like sitting under, what are those? Like a shade.
Yeah.
Drinking.
Whatever it is, it's good.
With a book.
Maybe. With a book. Yeah.
Yeah. In the quiet.
With no children.
With no children. That's what I meant. Yeah. Because I'm thinking I do want some Bob Marley or something maybe playing. But that's like, yeah, to me, funner than the countryside. But countryside's beautiful. I mean, it
absolutely
just depends on where or when and where you're at.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, did you want to listen to Abby's message?
Yes.
Because we did request Abby to give us an update on the Greyhound with the resistant hookworms.
Yes.
So we were calling her to see what she had to say.
Let me introduce you to one of our other features of OSARA. Play my messages.
2:16 p.m. today.
Message from Abby DePew.
Hey, sorry, I was on Do Not Disturb. I'm looking at her fecal. Sorry, Java has not brought a fecal back. We needed a fecal this week or last week. It's a normal fecal, but update is her McMaster's fecal, the egg count did decrease, so our Drontal and Trio is working. It's working, are working to help kill them hookworms. Okay, I'm going to go. Goodbye.
Harrison, did you get that?
That was your last cable.
So basically what she's saying is that the McMaster's fecal, the egg count is going down. So the Drontal and the Trio are working. We're waiting for her to drop off another fecal sample this week or next week so we can recheck, get another update on that, see how she's doing. But as of right now, at least, you know, those egg counts are going down.
That's awesome. Good job. Yeah. Okay.
So I like to
Very cool. Okay, cases. Bailey, you got notes. So
she's got the full
why don't you go first since you've got notes? Give us the signalment of the patient and then, you know, what your whatever's going on.
So this is a Dr. Dudley patient. She came in, I want to say about a little under a month ago. So about 2-3 weeks ago. She's a 7-year-old spayed female Australian Shepherd mix. She looks kind of like an Aussie, has those sketchy eyes. So she presented for ADR, just not doing good. She was lethargic. She was not eating, but she was urinating and defecating normally. But she did vomit bile a couple of times, you know, random things that could lead to any disease or anything. So we did in-house blood work, and her ALT was greater than 1,400 at the time. I know we did a dilution on it, and I think it was like 1,490 when we did the dilution. Her alkaphos was 507, and her total bilirubins was 3.8.
Okay.
And then she presented like icteric when Dr. Dudley did her exam. Just her eyes and her ears were kind of icteric, but she wasn't like bright yellow or, you know, crazy icteric.
She wasn't glowing yet.
No, yeah.
Okay.
And then we hospitalized her. We gave her Serenia for anti-nausea, Unison as an antibiotic IV, and then we started denimarin because of her liver values being so high. We also were suspecting that she was a lepto case, so we sent out a lepto PCR test just to see, if that could be the issue.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of treated her like she was a lepto case there. And then we ran blood work, the next day, and her ALT went up to 2680. Her total bilirubin went up 4.8, and her alkaphos went up to 952. So she was in bad conditions, but I wanted to go over lepto just a little bit while we have the platform to talk about it, because I know a lot of people have not, they've been led astray from vaccinating for lepto, but it is a zoonotic disease, so humans can get it. And this is a fact sheet from the CDC, and it's basically just animals get it from drinking water that has come in contact with certain urine of an infected animal. So any like creeks or anything like that, we want to be careful of. Puddles from rainwater that a raccoon or something might have urinated in, we always want to be careful of that as well. But symptoms are fever, chills. This is for humans because you know your symptoms better. Headaches, muscle aches, vomiting, diarrhea, jaundice, so yellow of skin, eyes, ears, things like that. Rash, and then red eyes sometimes as well. That's kind of more on the farther down the spectrum type of thing. And then certain animals can spread it. Raccoons and possums are the big one in Indiana. But other animals can get it as well. So dogs is the main one for humans. That's how we get it normally, because we come in contact with their urine and things like that. So yeah, we recommend that you vaccinate for it because it's very dangerous for humans. And it kind of shuts down the kidneys, liver, and all those main organs that you need to be able to function properly.
So did this dog end up having lepto?
No, the lepto test came back negative.
It came back negative. Okay.
Luckily. So then we did an ultrasound here, and Dr. Dudley saw that it was, her liver looked mildly hypoechoic, which is kind of subjective. So we sent her to VCA. They also did an ultrasound there. They said the same thing. And then they also did a liver cytology, and they said that the cells had mild vacuolar change and then mild to moderate inflammation. But they were just like, this could be toxins, diseases, anything like that, basically. We don't know. So they diagnosed her with, this is going to take me forever to try and say, hepatopathy.
Oh, hepatopathy. Uh-huh.
Yep. And they sent her home with some medications. So I know they sent her home with like vitamin K, Serenia, and then a bunch of other random medications, antibiotics as well. They rechecked her liver values again, and they went up gradually after they sent her home, but they also got them to go down while in clinic. So when they sent her home, they told her to come back in about a week, rechecked the values. They went up again, but they said that basically we don't know what's going on, so we're just going to keep monitoring liver values until...
Some type of insult.
Sounds like a steroid is
something
up in the line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what they mentioned in their name.
Yeah. Mm.
Yep. That liver, I tell you what.
It's tricky.
Yeah. It's tricky. It can take a huge hit and keep on ticking too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's amazing what we'll see in some of these patients. Because my case is also a liver case that is Marley Adams and came in, of course, on a Friday. Poor Cammy Adams, and was vomiting, not eating. And we ran lab work on her. She was like a 10-year-old dog and had unreadable, like even our dilutions, like we couldn't even dilute it, unreadable ALT, ALP. Her bilirubin was elevated. Her amylase and lipase were also high. So we ended up ultrasounding her, and she did have a mucocele. So I thought I was worried that she was going to rupture her gallbladder because her GGT was like 53 or something like that. And so... And she had pancreatitis, and so we sent her to VCA because I thought they were probably going to do surgery, because it was a kiwi appearance on the ultrasound, the gallbladder was. But they ended up, because they weren't going to do surgery that night, so they hospitalized her and put her on fluids, and she improved overnight on the fluids. So then they ended up monitoring her mucocele at this point. So her pancreatitis calmed down. And we treated her similarly, like fluids, antibiotics, anti-nausea medication, and her values are slowly coming down. Hmm. But yeah, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what it can do. Mm-hmm. So that's my case.
So my case is not one case. It is actually a combination of four.
Oh.
So in the last week to 2 weeks, we have had four parvo cases.
Oh, good. Talking about so, parvo. Good job.
Parvo.
Yeah, I forgot we've had four of them. You're right.
Yes. So parvo tends to attack puppies a lot of times, especially because they don't have those vaccines fully completed. So the first one that we saw was, I believe the dog was about 2 months old, came in for 4 months old. So vomiting and diarrhea, which in puppies is a huge sign for us. So we took parvo protocol of having them come around to the back of the clinic. Our RVTs will gown up. They'll put on, you know, gloves, all of that. We do the parvo test out in the parking lot. Because it's so contagious, we want to keep them isolated for as long as we can to protect the other patients. So that test did come back positive. And unfortunately, the owners could really only do conservative care at the moment because, you know, sometimes money is hard, especially, you know, when you do have multiple dogs at home, things like that. So we went kind of conservative, trying to just treat the symptoms of the vomiting and the diarrhea. And they have another dog at home, and we thought the dog was old enough, and the owners were fairly certain that that dog was vaccinated. So we sent the dog home. Unfortunately, the puppy did not make it. It passed overnight because it, you know, too far gone at that point. So they called back a few days later because now the other dog is showing symptoms. And what we found out is that apparently the information the owners had originally had about this dog, who he was 8 or 9 months old, he was not fully vaccinated the way that they thought he was. So he ended up getting parvo as well. He tested positive, but the same problem of only being able to do conservative treatment. Well, unfortunately, he passed as well. So this poor family lost two puppies in the course of a weekend, really, to parvo. But they had a friend who their dog then started showing symptoms. And that was your patient,
that was my
patient. Was 5 months old.
5 months old.
So same issue. Vomiting, diarrhea. She immediately said, hey, you know, I just lost my two puppies to parvo. You've been exposed to mine. Take your dog to All Star. So they bring the dog in. Yet again, more parvo. So that one we were able to hospitalize. So it took him back into isolation, hooked him up to fluids, put him on, was it Unison that we did for him?
Yeah, we did Unison and Metro
and Serenia
and fluids and
all the treatments.
All the treatments. So we kept him overnight. By the next morning, he was already feisty, feeling much better. Mm-hmm. We were able to send him home and he is thriving, doing well.
Were dogs 1 and 3 vaccinated?
My dog was not vaccinated.
So
one was
no.
not either.
Okay.
No. So I think that they had, they were planning on starting the puppy series of things, but they were not vaccinated.
They had a
yet.
Friend who could not take care of him and dropped him off basically on their front porch and said, here's this puppy, because they were not planning on getting another puppy.
Okay.
Yeah. That's so sad.
Yeah. So puppy number 3 survived. He's doing well.
He's doing great.
Mm-hmm. But then the next day, the same day that we were day 2 of treating dog number 3, we got a call about dog number 4. She was pretty young. I want to say she was 8 weeks. They had gone and picked her up at midnight. And because they saw a post about, oh, there's this dog, she's the last one left. So they picked her up, not realizing what, unfortunately, they were getting into. So they picked her up. We did a parvo test. She was positive. Same situation. I mean, she was just laying in the back. She wasn't moving. She really had no reaction to us doing the fecal swab and things like that. But we ended up needing to send her home. So we sent her home with a little bit of canned food, some Serenia. We did a little bit of fluids, things like that. And the owners were very careful. They were syringe feeding her Pedialyte, slowly getting there. And she is thriving.
Aww.
So she is doing well. It's one of those that it's so hit and miss. You can do everything right. We can hospitalize them and do everything that we absolutely can, and they still won't make it. And then you get the others that with just the minimal kind of doing what you can, that constant monitoring, getting the Pedialyte in them, getting the syringe feeding of the wet food, things like that, they'll do okay. But it's such a horrible case in that sense of, you know, you go from 0 to 100 so fast. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, it's just a little bit of vomiting, to everything has gone downhill and everything is wrong. Yeah. So, you know, our hearts go out to the family that lost both of their pets, because, you know, they were trying to do what they could. They didn't realize. And, you know, this is the season of, you start getting all those puppies of, here's this free dog. Well, if you don't know the background, you don't know, have they had those vaccines? What are you getting into when you just go pick up a free dog? But that's why it's so important to, as soon as you get them, kind of take them into your veterinarian, get those puppy vaccines started in them to kind of avoid that situation. Nothing is ever going to be 100%. You can still have a puppy that has started their distemper and parvo vaccines that can still get it, but it's going to help at least compared to a completely unvaccinated puppy.
Yeah. And, you know, if possible, pet insurance is also great for our young pets and even the pets that you get at a shelter. If that is something that you can do, of course, not for everybody.
While they're young, so they can cover it.
But it's amazing how much that can be truly helpful for things that you don't expect. Because even when you have a healthy puppy, maybe at 8 weeks of age, you know, 12 months of age, dogs and cats can get interesting things, you know, that I guess are interesting to us as vets, but to the client, to the pet, not interesting.
Right.
And whether that's immune mediated disease, or they eat something they shouldn't, or even young pets getting cancer and things like that. So
the amount of people that we've had that pet insurance has helped save when, you know, they do have that sudden foreign body that they didn't realize they were going to have to cover, things like that. Pet insurance is a fantastic thing to have on hand for all those puppies when you have no idea what their life's going to bring. So getting it young before you have any you know, those pre-existing conditions. If you do it when they're 3 or 4, you potentially have pre-existing conditions of, oh, they have a history of ear infections, things like that. So starting young, you're starting at zero. Mm-hmm. There's nothing necessarily in the file that says this is going to be an mm-hmm. issue going on, mm-hmm. which means pet insurance is likely to cover more compared to trying to get it later in life. Now, yeah. that doesn't mean don't get it. Mm-hmm. If you don't have it and you still want to, definitely go ahead and get it even when they're older because it'll still help. But getting it as young as possible is definitely a place to start.
Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. looking into that right now because my dog is a CCL tear candidate and hip dysplasia candidate.
Yeah,
so we're not going to tell insurance that. We're just going
yeah.
to try and get it.
Yeah, and parvovirus, back to parvovirus for just a second. Like, we see it this time of year is very common. Mm-hmm. So did you guys see it in Washington a lot
so
or not?
So interesting. You know, when I was over on the east side in Bellevue, yeah, we saw. Yeah. And I was in an emergency hospital. So, yeah, we did see a lot of parvo mm-hmm. And leptospirosis as well. But then once I went west side, Seattle, not so much. The case, if we have time, I might talk about my leptospirosis case, but it manifests very differently.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so – the answer to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and so I think this time of year around here with, and I think the thing for the listeners to know is that once you've contaminated your yard, like it's a long time before that virus, before you
year.
Can get, yeah. Yep. So you have to torch, dig up soil, which is not anything anybody does. So really, preventing exposure, knowing where your puppy's going, I guess is the
something
end
that
game.
We always recommend at puppy visits of don't take your puppy anywhere until they're fully vaccinated. So that would include as many distemper vaccines as we can get, the Bordetella, the rabies, things like that. So I know you get that puppy and you're like, oh, they're 12 weeks old. I want to take them to the dog park. I want them to meet everyone. Well, without knowing the vaccine history of every dog that's ever been in that dog park, you run the risk of them picking something up. So we will typically say, if you're going to introduce your puppy to someone before vaccines are completed, make sure that you know the vaccine history of that dog. So introduce them to a family dog that you know is up to date. Things like that, because yes, you want to take them. You want them to be socialized, meet all those dogs at the park, take them to boarding, things like that. But that's where you run that risk of if they're not covered, what can they pick up because somebody has let something lapse that they didn't think was going to be a big deal because their dog is 6-7 years old. But that puppy that's not fully covered, well, then that's where you run the risk of who's going to get sick because that other dog lapsed. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think in making sure that they're and by fully vaccinated would be sometime after 16 weeks of age. Sometimes mm-hmm. people will say 18 to 21 if you're a black and tan breed. But, mm-hmm. Getting to the point where they're considered to have an adult immune system. Mm-hmm. But the caveat to that would be puppy classes.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got to go to puppy classes. Puppy classes before they're fully vaccinated because you miss the
8 to 10 weeks.
Yeah, you miss that time period where it's really important before 16 weeks. But all those puppies, their history, their status.
I don't know if not to say this can happen, but usually, the parvo cases that I saw, none of them had a vaccine.
Right.
Yeah. So I would hope that even if they did catch parvo, like you mentioned, and they had the vaccine, that they have some protection.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of that, got to do the balance between socialization and exposure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Another thing, too, is sometimes, even if you get a dog and it just depends, there are some really great breeders out there that do things right. But if you're getting a pup on Craigslist and the person says, oh, I vaccinated, they've been dewormed. Maybe they really were, but that vaccine could have been expired. It might have, been administered wrong. So I would just say if a veterinarian recommends boostering, distemper parvo on your first visit, to do it, because we know how it's stored and administered correctly and make sure that we definitely get that immunity
exactly.
in the pet.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to hurt.
Right.
Exactly.
That's one more extra vaccine.
Yeah. Yeah. So
tell us about the lepto case, the weird lepto case.
Yeah, it's kind of a different story. It was like a four-year-old Bernese Mountain Dog, female spayed, back in Seattle. And she just had chronic azotemia. But at one point was like PUPD, polyuric, polydipsic, but did have a UTI that was cultured and treated. And owner said, no longer PUPD after that, but just kept rechecking labs. So ran a few different lepto screens, PCR of blood and urine, and lepto titers. What was the other one? I think that might have been it. But the lepto titer, the PCR of the urine was negative on the blood, but the lepto titer was the highest. One of them came back the highest that the lab had ever seen.
Wow. Okay.
So you can have, a dog can have subclinical leptospirosis. So it may not even come in and be, you know, lethargic and
really
all
sick.
Those things, yeah. All those things, you know. So we did treat for leptospirosis. And I believe the azotemia did get better, but I left Seattle before any more follow up to find out how they're doing. So yeah, I had a big conversation with you know, the internist on that case, because that was kind of tricky.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Have you ever seen a subclinical?
No, I haven't. No.
Yeah,
that would be really troubling, just because of the virus itself. I mean, being lepto, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, oh gosh, how annoying.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of scary too. You know?
Yeah,
yeah,
especially since we can get it. It's like gown up, mask, gloves. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wash your hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the full precautions we can take. Yeah.
Goggles even.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very interesting cases, guys. Good job.
Yeah.
All right. We're on to our listener question. And spoiler alert or warning, this is slightly controversial topic. Yes. So, okay, here we go. Hi. And I love the way this person phrased this question. I thought they did a great job. So here we go. Hi, y'all. I'm one of your 34 Spotify All-Star listeners, and I absolutely love your podcast. They bring me so much joy, and being the person who works two jobs and is a full-time college student, they are practically free therapy sessions for me on my car rides. Please never stop making them. I love them so much, and you guys are so awesome. My question for you is, do you believe that cosmetic surgery, like ear cropping and tail docking, are ethical? What about dyeing your dog's fur? I'm really interested because this is a pretty much 50-50 argument in my world, and I wanted to know what you guys thought. Lots of love from Chicago, from @Ishtar_Avakian. Does that sound right?
I think that's right, yeah.
Okay. So great question. Yeah. And we aren't afraid of difficult questions here at the All-Star Roundtable Podcast.
We're going to tackle it.
So we're tackling it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Head on.
Okay.
Why do we, okay, I guess we should back up. Why is it a difficult question? Because it's 50-50, right? I mean, I would say there's a lot of people on both sides of the fence.
Mm. Yeah, but I do feel like we're leaning more towards 90-10.
Maybe it's 60-40. Yeah. Okay, you think it's 90-10
now?
Yeah,
I do. I mean, you
maybe
may
even
see,
80-20.
Yeah, 80-20. I mean.
Well, but you were on the West Coast. So on the West Coast, they've been more aggressive about like banning or out, I don't know what the right word would be, outlawing things.
The first time I saw a boxer with a tail was in England. Like, so.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen a boxer.
Yeah. Like, I think they were more.
More aggressive and banning.
Aggressive about not doing those things. Uh-huh. And then I just haven't seen much of it. I'm trying to think. I mean, I just haven't seen much of it lately.
Is it because you don't think, have you, purebred dogs, those types of purebred dogs are in less households? Or maybe people that get those purebred dogs aren't pursuing the procedures? Maybe it's both.
I'm trying to remember. Do I see Aussies with tails or do I not? Or Corgis with tails? I can't even.
I never see a Corgi with a tail. I never see an Aussie with a tail.
I know a breeder who does Aussies and Corgis, and she just tail docks at home when they're like 3 to 5 days old.
Yeah. So. I just can't really. I don't even know if I'm just conscious of it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess you're so used to. I think I'm so used to seeing both that nothing would shock me.
Right.
But I remember in England seeing the boxer with the tail.
That would totally shock me. I would be totally like, what?
But I feel like when it comes to the tails, it's one that, because most of the time they come in as puppies and they just already don't have one, that I feel like it's ear cropping is the one that most of the time they come in and we're like, oh, like what is going on? Because they'll have, you know, their ears cropped and they're taped up with like a pool noodle or something like that. Mm. And that's where it tends to be, I feel like, the most shocking, because that is very much the, you know exactly what happened. But typically when they're docking the tails, like Bailey said, it's so young when it happens that it's already healed by the time we see it. So we don't necessarily think about the tail as much as the ears, because that is that visible. We're looking at the stitches. If it's been done properly, we're looking at the sutures that are in there. We're looking at, like I said, those pool noodles or cones that are covering their ears to help them stand up straight, things like that. So that's where you start seeing those physical representations, because you just don't ever think of those breeds of dogs like, oh yeah, they just don't have tails. Well, they did. Mm-hmm. They just don't now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because most breeders do the tail docking themselves with like dew claws. They like take them to a vet, or they have done so many litters and they're whatever, that might be unethical as well, just because of it's somebody who's not a veterinarian doing it.
Well, I think a lot, I mean, nowadays, I would say a lot of the breeders, yeah, will bring them to a vet and then yeah. you do mm-hmm. them depending on the breed at a particular day. Mm-hmm. Like, so yeah. like you mentioned 3 to 5 days or, you know, for a other breeds, weeks. You're doing it. And then the places where you're docking tails is different, obviously based on the breed. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily, personally, I don't consider it any better because the dog's having it done at 3 to 5 days versus it done at 12 weeks.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I would even be on the fence of the ear cropping is done better because the patient's anesthetized with pain medication, with everything, versus the tail docking, which is done with nothing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The patient's not anesthetized. There's no pain meds. There's no nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily like either one, but I also wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't keep somebody from having something like I wouldn't be like, no, you should like, I guess I wouldn't judge somebody for doing it, right. I guess is
yeah.
my point.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like I wouldn't do it to my dog. But
like how we feel about declawing. If it's yeah. going to keep the animal in the home, then.
Well, and, you know, to me, declawing is slightly different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still the same, but it's different because the, you know, we don't really promote declawing. But if you no. had an elderly person that wants to have a pet and it's bringing joy to that person's life, but yet the cat's going to cause some type of trauma because they have, mm-hmm. they're on blood thinners. I don't know, whatever the scenario might be. Then, you know, I guess here, the way I approach it is I am going to declaw the cat here, the way I do it, where I know it's done well with the right medications, than to say I'm not going to do it and worry where the pet's going to go have it done. Mm-hmm. Because if the owner is intent upon doing it, I don't know if I can convince them otherwise, even though I've talked to them because I've talked. And I guess the reason I think that is because I've talked to them about all the reasons why you shouldn't. And here are the things you can do instead. And then somebody still goes and has it done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I don't know. I guess I'm all over the place.
No, they're all, I don't think there's a black and white
yeah.
answer to it. You know, I was doing a little bit of reading this morning and I think there was more research about, what was it? I think, well, I obviously don't know what I'm talking about right now, but you know, with declawing, right? We know that these cats do have chronic pain problems
mm-hmm. yeah.
with that. And I don't know, I just kind of think from a homeopathic standpoint that, you know, cats, they're very hard to read anyway. We don't know when they're in pain. Oftentimes yes. they are in pain and we're not going to pick up on that. It's subtle things like, you know, eyes, ears, you know, just the way that they walk, the way that they jump. So I do think that there could be, you cannot rule out, you know, chronic pain, chronic yeah. neuropathy, right, from, you know, ear cropping and docking a tail. But also like you, I'm not going to judge somebody when they come in with their pet with these
yeah.
with these conditions. I just kind of, maybe we think about it later on if this pet is experiencing some kind of pain, you know, but yeah, I don't think there's a black and white answer, but I do feel like it's trending out.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen a dog with cropped ears. Maybe on the West Coast, I saw it once.
We see more dogs, more Rottweilers and things like that with tails yeah. now. Mm-hmm. I can't say that we've seen a boxer yet.
Well, Dobermans, like, yeah, so, see, yeah. like my son just had his dog's ears cropped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, now, you know, like I don't do that procedure, but my advice to him was I gave him all the pros and cons and I said, this is your decision. This is my opinion, but this is your decision. But he went and there's a lady that does, that's all the basically she does, a veterinarian that's all she does. And I will say, you know, she did a great job. I mean, they're perfect. And she's great. The dog herself is great. Now, like to your point, I don't know what type of chronic mm-hmm. potential issue the dog may have.
Yeah.
You know, but gosh, you want someone, if you're going to do that stuff, you need somebody who knows how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think that that's a huge part of it that you're right. If you're going to pursue those procedures, you want somebody that is going to treat your pet and your patient correctly, of making sure that they're on the right pain medications, making sure they know what they're doing. So taking it to somebody to professionally have it done, just so that you can have the best chance for recovery in those patients. Because, you know, what we think and how we feel about it isn't going to affect how we treat the patient.
Exactly.
So we see those puppies that come in and they have, you know, the cones and the noodles and things like that. We don't treat them any different. We're still going to love on them and love them mm-hmm. for what they are. And we're not going to judge the owners as much as, you know, we may not agree with it, but that's what they did. So we're going to treat them with respect, do what we can, and, you know, just take care of that patient. But like you said, just keep an eye on them, see, make sure that they're healing properly. We always like to make sure when we do have those puppies come in that we're doing rechecks, making sure that those sutures are healing nicely, making sure the ears are healing nicely, so that there's no side effects after that of no infections. Nothing is, you know, healing in a weird direction, anything like that. We always want to keep an eye on them to make sure that they are healing properly.
And I think it always depends on what the purpose of the breed is. So like, if you have a Doberman, and we have quite a few people here who show dogs or breed dogs here, that come here, and you just have to think about the purpose, because AKC registered dogs and things like that, they have standards for their breeds. I know that they're kind of going out and like they're optional now, mm-hmm. But some people just really like the way that it looks, or even some judges like the way that it looks too. So yeah. It just depends on what the purpose is of that dog.
And that's a good point, that I think a lot of these things at one point were work related for the dog, mm-hmm. right? So when I was reading a little bit, like the Doberman, part of the reason they did it was to make the dog look alert for mm-hmm. guard dog purposes, mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. be kind of, you know, intimidating, right? But they also thought, oh, does this help with ear infections? Does this help prevent ear infections on our floppy ear dogs, things like that? But I think at one point it was more, you know, the dog had a job and they didn't want it injured in hunting or whatnot, mm-hmm. But our listener words it really well, that it's cosmetic mm-hmm. surgery, yeah. mm-hmm. you know, and that's what it is now.
I would cosmetic. Agree there's yeah. some yeah. situations where it's not, but I would agree the majority of them
even
are
for
cosmetic.
Showing it's cosmetic,
yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
We do have those occasional patients that are still actively working dogs. You do have some of those farm dogs and things like that, but yes, a lot of them now are, they're doing it for the breed standard, or what has been created as a breed standard. So it is a cosmetic elective surgery for mm-hmm. probably 90% of our patients when we see them.
Yeah. And tail injury is another thing I read, are pretty rare. So even though we're docking tails mm-hmm. because we think we're trying to prevent an injury while we're hunting, for example, it's yeah. actually not that common of yeah. an occurrence. Yeah. So
I think you're.
I have less of an issue with dew claws. Like, yeah. I mean, like, I'm like, oh, yay. Like, the dew claw's not there. Only because, like, if you're hunting, like, you know what I mean? Oh, like, those
yeah.
get.
They do. Yeah.
Ripped but off. But yeah. at the
yeah,
same time.
The dogs that are chewing on them are the ones that
are. I will not. Like, one of the things I like, so heavily discourage, like, somebody once, it's a Labrador Retriever that's going to be a field dog, and the dew claws weren't removed. And so now they want it removed when the dog's spayed or something. I'm like, oh, no, that's worse than the spay. Mm-hmm. Like, taking that off is going to bother the dog more than the spay, I feel. You know, yeah. like, they act mm-hmm. like it hurts more than the spay. And so, you know, which I don't think people really realize, we're talking amputation.
We're talking yeah, bone,
you're
which
essentially
tail
losing
is an
a
amputation.
Finger.
Right. So yeah. it's
a
yeah.
bone, yeah, that hurts, yeah.
What do you guys think about the dye? The
oh,
dyeing,
I love it.
Dyeing the fur.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, as long as you're using a pet-safe yep. dye, you know, generally, I would say also making sure that you're going to a groomer or somebody who knows what they're doing. So then that way the pet isn't trying to lick the dye if you're trying to do it at home, things like that. I know if I were to ever try to dye Sirius at home myself, he would cause trouble. So going to somebody to professionally do it, I know that it's helped prevent, in certain cases, animals being stolen. Because if you're looking at a group of dogs, the dog with the bright pink tail is probably not the one that I'm going to take, because you're going to be able to see it from a mile mm-hmm. away. Compared to the five Goldens that all look exactly the same, I'm just going to snag that one. So there have been some cases and studies that have shown that dogs that do have dyed fur are less likely to be taken in that mm-hmm. sense when you have those purebred dogs that people are going to take.
There's a lot of service dogs that have been getting their fur mm-hmm. dyed, especially their tails, mm-hmm. Just to prevent that.
But yeah, the big thing I would say is making sure that you're using a pet-friendly dye, not just going and picking up hair dye off of the shelf at Walmart. You know, doing the research, making sure that what you have is going to be safe to actually put on your pet.
And don't be bleaching your dog to dye them.
No.
I just don't know just, enough about this.
Yeah. Well, me neither. And I'm thinking, okay, so all of these things are done to the dog mm-hmm. without the dog's consent.
But so are vaccines.
So are vaccines.
So I mean, are blood yeah. draws.
Right?
It's all, you know, and that's why I like this question, because we could really go there. With
right? Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like, okay, so we're okay dyeing the dog's fur
yeah.
without the dog's consent. We're okay doing all these. So... I mean, and I know that it doesn't, in theory, hurt the dog. I mean, yeah. We could probably comfortably say that, right?
Yeah.
I mean.
I don't know.
It's pet friendly.
Of course, I don't know whether or not it messes up their hair.
I know.
You know, does it, you know, I have no, I don't know.
I know that the groomers who do it know to, like, not go to skin and things like mm-hmm. that. So they're not, like, dyeing the skin. Like how when we dye our hair, how it sometimes gets on our scalp. They kind of avoid the skin areas and things like that just to make sure. And then they only do it on dogs who are lighter in color. Mm-hmm. So they're not bleaching the fur and things like that. I saw a TikTok the other day of a dog who had rainbow hair and a rainbow painted on it with unicorns. And it was just, it was a poodle that was like that. And the mom
that's what I think of as poodles when I think of dyed hair.
Yeah,
I poodles.
Followed a groomer on TikTok that she would, she would have. I think that the dog, one half of the dog would be pink and the other half would be purple or blue or something. But she always made sure that, like Bailey said, the dye isn't going down to the fur. She was using pet safe bleaches or not bleaches, but dyes and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then making sure, because she gets a lot of people calling her out for it, where she's like, listen, I know what I'm doing. I've researched the brands that I'm using. I do it on my dog who I know can handle me sitting there dyeing her fur. She's not actively trying to get away from me. She's not fighting me while I'm doing it. And she's doing it while she's giving baths and things like that. So she's very careful when she does it. But I mean, if you do have a dog that's fighting you while you're trying to do it, probably stop. Don't continue to dye the fur of a dog that really doesn't want it. But if you have one that's kind of just relaxed as you're doing it, I don't know. I think that you're right. It is that hard, very slippery slope of I'd be mad if I woke up and somebody had just dyed my hair in the middle of the night. So, I mean, if you put that on you and you're thinking about it that way of like, all of a sudden I just wake up and my hair is green, I'd probably be a little upset. But they can't give that consent. Like the dogs can't do that. It's
unless
not
a dog
like,
starts talking, that's what I'm going to worry about.
Yeah. I have to watch out for like, are they trying to bite me while I'm doing it? That's mm-hmm. the closest I can get to them not giving me consent, I guess.
Yeah, I'm having like a Look Who's Talking movie idea, yes. But I think that was already a movie, Look Who's Talking 3, you know, where the poodle's like, ah, oh, Jamie did it to me again. Gave me a red mohawk.
My God, Look Who's Talking, the first one was a great movie.
Oh, it's such a good movie.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Geez.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Kirstie Alley.
Yeah.
Well, listen, this was a great question, but I guess the end of the story is that it's 50-50. Yeah. No, but I agree with you. I think it's shifting more towards. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, I think you have people, I guess my point in saying it's 50-50 is you have people on both sides of the fence. Mm-hmm. You're going to continually have conversations about the pros and cons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I don't think I don't see that changing anytime in the near future. Although I do think in our industry, we are leaning more towards those things, not
more cons than there are pros to everything.
Yeah, you're always going to have those very divided sets of people who that's what they want. They want the breed standard. This is what they want. That's what they're going to follow. So they're going to do it. There's not necessarily going to be any talking them out of it because that is exactly what they want. Versus the people who are like, no, I'm not going to hurt my dog. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. Well, then you run into that. Does it hurt them long term? Does it not? It is always going to be that kind of, you're going to have that very divided split of the people that are absolutely for it and the ones that are against it. And there's not really going to be a way to stop that, because when you do start to ban things and stuff like that, you find the people that are doing it under the table. So it's still going to happen one way or another. It depends on how safely it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I always recommend talking to your veterinarian, Googling, researching great articles that have everything on it. But just research and talk to people about it and see what they think, what's best for them, and do what's best for yourself as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's all cosmetic. So I think that the evidence that is published is mostly leaning towards this is more harm than good.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we're lacking studies that show otherwise, you know?
Yeah, so, that can really drive the point home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it might be, you know, that we just are missing that information. But again, we won't judge, treat you like your family.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great question. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Veterinary Roundtable. Remember, send in those questions and be sure to follow us on all social media platforms at All Star Veterinary Clinic. If you enjoyed this episode or a previous episode, leave us a review on your podcast provider of choice. We'll see you in a few weeks for the next episode of the Veterinary Roundtable.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Lots of fun. Thank you.